You may remember Mr. Dennett being interviewed as a UFO investigator a couple of months ago. He's also a paranormal investigator, and he has graciously consented to do an interview on the paranormal for us. Will you tell us how long you've been doing paranormal investigations and what books you've written on the subject, if any?
Well, let me see. I started pretty much the same time I started investigating UFOs, which was back in 1988. And let me see, since then I've written, 12 books, and about half of them are on the paranormal. So a couple books on ghosts, a book on out-of-body experiences, one on levitation, and one on Bigfoot. So I've been pretty busy.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I see a lot of shows on TV lately that deal with paranormal investigations. What's your general feeling about most of these shows?
Oh, I'm really excited about a lot of them because finally they're bringing the technology that we have to study things which we can't see normally. So things like electronic voice phenomena or these electromagnetic readings, these instruments are really capturing some amazing evidence, I think. I think some of the best proof we have of ghosts is coming out right now on these shows.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really excited about it.
Do you think that there are humans that have any sort of paranormal abilities? And I want to tell you, I'm asking you this question because the famous magician, the Amazing Randy, told me that he's been offering $1 million prize to anyone that can perform a paranormal act, and no one's ever collected this in the 30 years that the prize has been available.
Right. Well, I'm absolutely convinced, of course, that people do have a wide range of paranormal abilities. And as far as Amazing Randy, I'm not exactly sure what his qualifications are for his getting the $1 million. But I understand that it's not, you know, cut and dry and easy to do.
No, it certainly isn't.
I've experienced my own. You know, I've had several dreams which have come true. I saw my mother's ghost after she died. That's actually what got me interested in all this.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I know personally, I've talked to way too many people to have any doubt anymore that ghosts are real or that people can go out of their body or telepathy. I'm absolutely convinced that's a reality. And levitation, I've got more than 350 cases stretching back all the way through history, appearing in pretty much every culture. So people have a whole lot of abilities that we've only begun to tap into.
Some people say that orbs in photos indicate spirits or energy from deceased individuals, but others say that they're dust reflecting light or anomalies caused by digital cameras. What do you believe and why?
I don't think that they're dust. Maybe in some cases they are, but the majority, no. I think that in many cases they probably are spirits because they certainly do seem to appear more in areas that are known to be haunted. And for example, I took the ghost tour on the Queen Mary, which is supposedly one of the most haunted places in Southern California. And we went into the pool room, which is supposedly haunted by a little girl. And I stayed after all the crowd left and took a bunch of pictures. And a couple of them do show orbs. It's very faint, but I've had several other people send me their photographs of orbs. And so I'm not entirely sure what they are, but my theory at this point is that they are spirits and that are kind of manifesting, if you will, from the other side. It's interesting because the orbs seem to be a relatively new phenomena. We don't have a lot of orb photographs stretching back into history.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. You know, it's a curious thing that seems to be getting a lot more attention these days.
And do you think that's tied in any way with digital cameras?
Well, I don't think so because they're not appearing only on digital cameras. The orbs that I captured were captured on normal film, and several other people I've spoken with have captured them on normal film. So I don't think it's, you know, a product of digital photography, no.
Do you think that investigating an area where there has been a lot of suffering and death will be more fertile for finding spirits than an area that doesn't have such a history?
Well, I think probably yes, because those sort of energies seem, for whatever reason, powerful emotions or tragedies do seem to become imprinted into the environment somehow. I think there's different theories of what ghosts actually are. There's sort of the residual haunting, which is, I think, what we're talking about here, where an environment becomes saturated in negative vibrations, or, you know, possibly positive even, to where the point that people pick up on it and can actually, you know, see things. But then, of course, there's ghosts, which are actual spirits who have passed on and are physically there. So there's at least two different kinds of ghosts, I think. And I would say the residual haunting is probably more popular than the other kind.
EVPs, or electronic voice phenomena, are being found in many places. Can you tell us about them?
Yeah, you know, EVP is very strange because this is another thing that seems relatively new. We don't hear a lot about this. You know, if you research ghost phenomena going back hundreds of years, there's absolutely nothing like electronic voice phenomena. So it's a relatively recent phenomenon, but it seems to be valid. Certainly, it's been repeated by a number of different researchers who have come up successfully with these apparent messages that appear on tape, which you can't hear normally. I think the theory is that spirits are able to affect electromagnetic instruments, which we know they can. They can turn off and on lights and things like this. So it doesn't seem to be a stretch for them to be able to do something like this. And in fact, it could be a way for spirits to communicate with the living. And when we find this process, it could actually become a two-way conversation between the physical world and the other side. But it's bizarre because a lot of these people who do EVP, they start out and they start to get some really scary messages sometimes. But I've talked to researchers and they said that they get cursing, they get a lot of foul language, and before they sometimes get, you know, more pleasant messages. I think the reason for that is because the other side, the closest plane to the physical plane would be where all the, I would guess you would say the bad people go, the murderers, the drug addicts, the people who are still caught in negative emotions. So this is why you don't want to use a Ouija board, for the same reason, because you'll probably end up contacting a spirit who's going to lie to you and who does not have the best intentions. And when you do EVP, this can also happen as well. So I think it is a valid tool to make contact with the other side. And again, I'm really excited about all these different ways we're using technology to sort of investigate things that we never could investigate before.
Have you ever gotten any spirit recordings, and if so, under what circumstances?
No, I haven't actually. I haven't done a lot of research into EVP personally. I mean, I've certainly read about it and interviewed a lot of people, but I haven't done it. It kind of freaks me out a little bit. The last thing I want to do is have someone, you know, cursing at me.
It's said that Thomas Edison worked on a machine for many years that would have been capable of talking to the dead if he would have been able to perfect it. Do you think it's possible to talk to the dead by any means?
Right, I heard about his machine, and he was very into the whole telepathy thing as well. And I absolutely do think it's possible to talk to the dead. Mediums are already doing it, and I think the evidence coming from, you know, spiritual mediums is pretty darn convincing. I mean, there's a lot of evidence for ghosts, not only just eyewitness accounts of, you know, people who see apparitions and things like this, but these mediums, the stuff that they're bringing out is really extraordinary. And I think if we could just figure out how they're doing it, we would definitely be able to have a conversation with a ghost. And, you know, there are some of these paranormal shows that we were talking about earlier who are seem to be just at the point of having a conversation using electromagnetic instruments, EV, or EMF readings, an instrument that can record the level of electromagnetic energy, or a ghost can turn, say, a light switch off and on that's very sensitive. And so there have been researchers now who claim to have had yes and no type conversations with ghosts, where they ask a question, and if the answer is yes, the light blinks once. If it's no, the light blinks twice.
Yeah, what do they call that, if you know, there's a device that's something like a KV meter, I think, or something like that, that picks up electromagnetic frequencies, and it has five lights on it. And supposedly they can contact the spirit, and he can talk to them by registering how many lights back to them. In other words, they say do three lights for such a thing, or do two. Have you heard of that?
I have. I don't know what it's called. I have heard of that, but I think these are the type of instruments that are going to be what's going to end up being successful in talking to ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
Already now, I mean, people are saying, they go into a haunted house and say, is there a spirit here? Show me a sign. And often, you know, something will fall off a shelf, a light will go on, an orb will be photographed. So the ghosts can clearly hear us. They can clearly see us. We can't see them for whatever reason, this veil between the world is apparently like a one-way mirror where they can see us and we can't see them.
Mm-hmm.
But all the research shows that they're very, very close to us. They're just a step up in vibration, I guess would be one way of putting it. But it's all happening right very close around us.
Some people who are dying have said that they would come back if it were possible to prove that life after death exists. One of these people was Harry Houdini, the great magician.
Right.
He never succeeded, but it is said that one day, after many years of his wife and friends waiting for this to happen, his book fell off of a shelf and opened up to his statement that he would return. Do you think this was a sign from him?
I think it very well could have been. You know, I haven't researched his case extensively. I've heard a lot of controversy about this whole, has Houdini come back or not? Because some people say that he has, and there have been seances that have had some remarkable things happen. So I couldn't personally say whether he has come back or not, but I certainly know a lot of other people have. I mean, in my own case, my mother, after she died, this is what sent me on my whole research to investigate the paranormal, and I've had a number of experiences with her that were really profound. So I'm absolutely convinced that people can come back and give a sign, so to speak. I don't know why they don't do it more often or more easily, perhaps because it's so great on the other side that they don't want to come back, or that they know that we're all going to be there shortly, so there's no need to, or because we visit every night in our dreams. I don't know. You know, it's the veil between the worlds is the thing that I think needs a lot of research put into it before we can even understand what is going on there.
One of the problems in the field of paranormal investigation is that there are a lot of hoaxers. Is there any way to spot this type of person?
I do run into people who are hoaxing, who are just looking for attention, who are flat out lying, trying to fool the investigator. And it is a problem. It muddies up the valid research out there and sort of confirms people who are skeptical that this is all just a bunch of baloney. But there are ways, I think, to weed out hoaxers. Like any phenomena, ghosts manifestations do follow certain patterns. And if you carefully interview someone, you can pretty easily trip them up. Because there's red flags that, you know, investigators look for in these accounts, which pretty much indicate that people are telling the truth.
Would you say that there are dangerous spirits out there?
You know, this is another thing that's really controversial, which I can't seem to get a straight answer on from researchers or experiencers, is, are ghosts dangerous? Are there dangerous spirits? Personally, after doing, you know, years of research, I'm convinced that ghosts are just like people, and yes, can be dangerous and can in some cases be very dangerous. I've certainly talked to people who have been pushed downstairs, nearly possessed, and had some really negative experiences. There's some reports that, you know, ghosts, people who move into haunted houses can have a lot of tragedies befall them. And as far as demons, well, Hans Holzer, he's a very famous ghost researcher. He said there was no such thing as demons. Whereas, you know, Ed and Lorraine Warren, famous demonologists, say, oh, yes, there's definitely demons. But they kind of mix it up with humans, calling some human ghosts demonic. So what I think the case is that we have ghosts who are, you know, people who pass over, who are very, very negative, and who can come across as demonic and evil. And but I'm not entirely convinced that there aren't necessarily demons. I just don't know enough, really. But I've certainly talked to a lot of people who've seen these very, very tall, dark apparitions, like 8-9 feet tall. Are these non-human ghosts? Possibly. You know, I think it's entirely possible. And but yeah, ghosts can be dangerous. I would say a quarter, maybe a fifth of the haunting cases I've investigated are the result of somebody messing around with a Ouija board.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty darn common. So it can be dangerous, but for the most part, I think it's a big deal for a ghost to turn off and on a light or open a door or, you know, pull someone's hair. I think it takes a lot of energy for them to affect the physical environment. So I don't think it's something that people are going to have to really worry a lot about. But on the other hand, I think there are spirits out there who have learned how to do this. And some are, you know, what we would call evil. And I think that there are cases of people who have been, you know, possessed and, you know, pushed into situations and forced to do things that they would not normally do. So I'm going to say they're about as dangerous as people are.
Okay. Do ghosts ever follow people when they move?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. They follow people all the time. This is, I think, especially true for people who have poltergeist-type phenomena, which is, you know, a really active ghost. Again, poltergeists are very controversial. People aren't sure if it's just the suppressed energy from a disturbed teenager or a person, or if it's uncontrolled mediumship, or if it's some sort of demonic ghost or something like this. But in these types of cases, the ghosts will follow people from house to house, wherever they go. And you know, it's interesting that you mentioned, do ghosts follow people? Because I have a friend who's a nurse, and she's also had a lot of ghost sightings. And when she started working at this one hospital, the head nurse brought all the other nurses in and told them to not become alarmed if they see a ghost, because it's apparently pretty common in hospitals. And if ever they deal with a patient who has died, they should not go directly home, because they've had several cases where the spirits of people who have died in hospitals have followed these nurses home and started the haunting. So this head nurse told all these other nurses, you know, if ever you lose a patient, go out shopping, go out and have a drink, go to a restaurant, have a meal. Don't go directly home. You know, and other people, you know, have, you know, driving by car accidents, this is another thing where people have actually picked up spirits who have followed them home. So, yeah, spirits absolutely do follow people, especially if they think that you can hear them or see them in some way. So, yeah, they're very attracted to people who are psychic.
What are shadow people?
Shadow people? Well, you know, I've heard that term. I think that's just another word for spirit. You know, when people see an apparition, it can appear as a very dark form. It can appear as an outline of light. It can appear as a full flesh and blood person. But most people will see little shadows. And I don't know if it's, you know, I haven't heard the term specifically shadow person to differentiate it from another type of ghost. So, mm-hmm. As far as I know, that's just another way that ghosts manifest?
A couple of years ago, I took a ride out to the house known as the Amityville Horror House on Long Island.
Oh, you did? Wow.
The number had been removed from the house, and some work was done to the front of it to disguise it. Do you think that there could have been murderous spirits in a home like this?
Absolutely. The Amityville case is, of course, very controversial. There are the people who've lived in there, they were interviewed, and said that they've never experienced anything. But I know somebody who was friends with the Lutzes, who were the main witnesses. And she asked them, was this real? Did all this happen? And they said, yes, we don't talk about it. We won't talk about it, other than to tell you that, yes, it was real. And if you examine that case and compare it to other cases, I've got other cases that follow the same exact pattern. So I am entirely convinced that if that particular case isn't real, it could have been, and there are a lot of other cases just like it. So I do think that, that spirits can infest a house like that and force a person to commit murder.
Mm-hmm. So you believe that a ghost could take over a person's body and force them to do things?
I do, and I don't come to that conclusion lightly. I've talked to many people who have experienced possession or near possession, and it can be very scary. I talked to two ladies who moved into a haunted apartment, and things started out very slowly. They kept hearing knocking noises. Objects would move around. Lights would be turned on and off. They'd be in the living room, and suddenly this huge clatter would appear and sound off in the kitchen. They'd run into the kitchen. There'd be nothing there. They had a weird phenomenon where they'd turn on the water faucet, and the water would go sideways. Really bizarre. I've talked to other people who've had that same exact thing happen, where they turn on the water faucet and it goes sideways. How someone could make up a detail like that, I don't know. But their case, these ladies, it just kept getting worse and worse, to where they started to see apparitions, and then they would start to get into these knockdown, fighting arguments with each other. And at this point, the spirits would appear, much more bravely and would appear right in front of them and sort of egg them on almost. They felt like these spirits were trying to cause them to become angry with each other.
Hmm.
And this is something that's turned up in several cases. And it just got worse and worse until one day, they were actually in their bedroom when the bed started shaking. And one of the girls started praying, stop it, go away. I don't want to deal with you anymore. And she started saying the Lord's Prayer. And at this point, one of these spirits came swooping in and came right into her body. And she said she could hardly breathe. She got this image of this really oily-haired woman with bad teeth and just an evil grin. And she said she felt really altered. And it was around this time that she actually went out to visit a friend, and her friend did not recognize her. Until she got right up next to her. She went up to pet the neighbor's dog who loved her. The dog did not recognize her and tried to bite her. So whatever was going on with this lady, other people and animals were sensing it.
Mm-hmm.
And she said she felt very altered and was, suicidal at times. And she was able to pull out of it eventually. But, yes, spirits can enter into your body and cause you to do things you would not normally do.
Do you think that it is possible for a spirit to return to human form?
Absolutely. I think that it is possible. I think that's what we would call reincarnation and past lives. And I've done a lot of research into that as well. It's a very hard to understand phenomenon because of, what happens to our identity after we die and then decide to be reborn into another person. But I do think that, reincarnation is real, and this is what happens to us. We die, we go to the other side, we plan out our next life, and we come back into human form again until we get it right, so to speak.
What would you think if I said to you that it might be possible for human beings to pass memory on to each other by some chemical means, such as bees do and other insects?
Well, I haven't heard of that by chemical means. I think people can certainly...
What genetic means? On. You know, either way.
Well, there's telepathy, and I think that that's a valid phenomena. And
no, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying that... let me see if I can put this a little clearer. People that believe they were reincarnated believe that because they have memories from other people. But what if these memories were acquired and there was no passing of spirits, but they were acquired through chemical or genetic means and the people acquired them without realizing it?
Well, you know, that's definitely a theory that should be tested. I mean, because we don't know for sure where these memories are coming from and how many people claim to be, you know, some famous personage in history. Probably quite a few. So everybody can't be the same person in, you know, Joan of Arc or whatever, the Queen of Marie Antoinette or some what have you. So, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I do.
And that seems to be happening. There's a number of people who are claiming, you know, oh, I was John Lennon in a past life or whatever. So, I don't know. That's a theory which I think we should look into.
Well, I've been exploring that theory for over 30 years. it is said that... I'm sorry, what's that?
No, and that's interesting because I haven't really heard of that. So.
Yeah, I'm one of the few people that believe that may be happening. It is said that spirits can take over objects. Have you ever observed this?
Oh, you know, that's an interesting phenomenon as well, because I've got several cases where people say that their hauntings began when they bought an antique object of some sort. One lady I know in Las Vegas, she's really into Native American art, and she had to give up one of her pieces of Native American jewelry, because as soon as she got it, her house just broke out into this really intense haunting. And she could not figure out what was happening and finally sought the help of a psychic who told her it was a piece of jewelry that she had bought. And there was only one, so she got the piece of jewelry and got rid of it, and the haunting stopped. And there are other cases like this where people will have, you know, a haunted chair, a haunted piano. There's another case I investigated involving a haunted mirror, which these people bought this mirror, and it gave it in the creeps, and they started having a lot of really weird stuff happen at their store. This was a bookshop. And they brought in a psychic, and the psychic walked straight up to the mirror and said, this is it. This mirror is what's causing all the problems. It's some sort of portal. It's been used for mirror magic in the past. And as she was walking away, the psychic, the mirror shattered into a bunch of little bits. So I think ghosts do become attracted to objects. Perhaps they feel like they are still the proper owners of it. I don't know if they're possessing it, in a sense. I mean, Ed and Lorraine Warren said that they had a case where a ghost possessed a doll. And so I don't know. I think it's possible, but it just doesn't seem logical to me that a spirit is going to possess an object in the sense that, you know, they live inside of it.
So let's see if I have this right. You're saying that the ghost comes with the object.
Exactly. It's their mirror. It's their right. Chair.
Have you ever heard about anyone having a cordial relationship with a spirit? In other words, somebody that has a ghost in the house that they actually converse with?
Well, in some cases, I mean, probably... There are several cases I've talked to people who have conversed with the ghosts of their loved ones. And one lady I talked to, her whole family are mediums. And she said she'd walk in on her aunt all the time, and her aunt would be sitting there having a conversation with their dead grandmother, and would be sitting on the bed or standing at the foot of the bed in full color, looking like a normal person, and they just carry on a conversation. And there are a lot of cases like this, but it's almost always between people who are really closely related or, you know, have some sort of really strong love connection. A mother and a daughter, a husband and a wife, things like this.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think people can have absolutely cordial relationships with ghosts. And I've talked to actually a number of people who tell me their ghost encounters, and when I go over and visit, they don't want anyone to try and get this ghost to go to the other side. They like having the ghost around. It's kind of like a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And one lady I talked to, she was having ghostly experiences and was pretty scared of it at first because she thought someone was breaking into her house, a living robber. And when she finally realized it was a ghost, she was extremely relieved and very happy about it because she thought, you know, she was dealing with a stalker.
Mm.
And for some reason, having an invisible stalker made her much less nervous.
Haunted ships have been talked about for thousands of years, and ships from World War II are no exception. It is said that the aircraft carrier USS Hornet is haunted. It's now a floating museum, and the people that work on it claim they have seen phantom officers and crew walking the halls and climbing on deck. And not only that, but they claim that more and more ghosts are coming there that served on the ship. Have you ever heard of this, and what do you think about it?
I have heard of it. I've seen some programs on the U.S. Hornet and talked to some people, and they've had a lot of stuff happen there. I mean, they have, like, heavy chains on the ship. These chains have been pulled out and moved. People are still apparently doing the job that they did when they were alive. Now that they're dead, they're still there on the ship doing it. I don't know if this is a case that would be more explained as a residual type haunting, because there was a lot of people on these ships, you know, on that ship and other ships, closely packed together, experiencing a lot of trauma. You know, and people, ghosts don't always rush off to the other side when they die. They like to hang out where they lived, where they worked, where they, you know, spent most of their enjoyable time. And for a lot of people, that could be, you know, the ship where they were stationed on. And that's probably what's happening with the Hornet. I do think that the phenomena is valid that's going on there. It's happened to way too many people, and the witnesses are really pretty reputable. These military guys are obviously not lying. So it's really a fascinating case. You're right, there are a lot of haunted ships. And what's really bizarre, I think, when it comes to ghosts is there's like ghost ships. The ship itself is a ghost. So how can you explain that? I don't know. Because, I mean, that we obviously have a lot to learn about ghosts, because these ghosts are not appearing naked, for another thing. There's ghostly clothes. There are ghostly cars. There's ghostly houses. So there's definitely a lot to learn.
How many paranormal investigations have you participated in?
Well, I've done a few of what I would call like formal ones, where, you know, with groups, where you bring on instruments. But for the most part, most of the stuff I do is pretty much just going to the witness's house and interviewing them, and things like this. So, I mean, I've done scores of that type, you know, probably close to 100, and I would say more like a half dozen or a dozen formal type of investigations.
What was your most interesting investigation and why?
Oh, God, let me think. That's a difficult question. I'm going to say that one of the most interesting cases for me was the White Witch of El Sobrante, because this involves so many witnesses. And this is a case which involving a ghost which has been appearing for years and years to a lot of people up in El Sobrante, California. As the story goes, there was an old lady who dabbled in black magic, that type of thing. She had a young daughter of dating age. And one day this daughter brought home a sailor, a blonde-haired sailor. And in the middle of the night, a fire broke out in the home, which was apparently caused by the sailor. The sailor fled the home, leaving the mother and the daughter to die in the fire. And ever since then, this lady, the White Witch, has been seen roaming the hills looking for this blonde sailor. And there's a lot of people, like I said, who have seen this ghost. There was two ladies on horseback who said that they were riding along when this ghost started to follow them. And they galloped at high speed to get away, and this ghost kept right up with them. Other people have seen it running through fields, playing with the cows and things like this. And I talked to a group of young men who are actually musicians. They have a rock band. And they were inspired to, they wanted to find inspiration for a song. And they thought, well, let's write about the White Witch, as it's called. And they decided to sort of see if they could provoke the ghost into an appearance, because one of these boys is blonde. And apparently this ghost likes blonde boys. And so they just went out to this area kind of on a lark, not really thinking anything would happen. But it did. No sooner had they gotten to this area, Alvarado Park is the specific area. And they were out on a bench just waiting and waiting. And right when they were about to leave, they all got into the car and were getting ready to drive away when this ghost appeared. And they said it was very tall, at least 6 feet tall. It hovered about a foot off the ground. And it was obviously a woman wearing a long, flowing dress and appeared to actually give off light or glow, a white light. And two of the witnesses couldn't really give me a good interview because they said that they were so frightened that they did not want to even look at this thing. And they were screaming, and they all took off in the car and sped away. And as soon as they got away from the area, they, you know, gathered their wits about them and talked to each other and said, you know, did we really see that? Did that really just happen? And peer pressure being what it is, they ended up turning around and going back to try and provoke this ghost into another appearance. They went to the same area right away, and right after they got there, this ghost appeared again, and it was a repeat scene, only this time they were even more scared, because the ghost was appearing not only in one place, but in multiple locations all around them, and seemed to be intentionally trying to frighten them, which it did, and again, they were ended up driving off in fear, and not going back. But yeah, there was a very interesting case, which is apparently still ongoing. I've heard that there was a book written about the case, which is in the El Sobrante library, but I have not been able to locate it. But it's a very interesting case, one of my favorite.
Have you ever found that when you were on a paranormal investigation, that people were trying to pull the wool over your eyes, and the case was a setup, maybe to give a reputation that some place was haunted to improve its business or something like that?
No, I haven't actually run into a lot of people who've, you know, tried to hoax me or anything like that. I think in some cases people do think that they're having paranormal phenomena when it's actually not, and not because they're trying to intentionally hoax, but just because they're, you know, don't understand that sometimes, you know, when a picture falls off the wall or, you know, it's not necessarily a ghost that's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So for the most part, no. I think most of the people who, you know, I've contacted or who have contacted me are having genuine experiences. I don't think that the hoaxing is really that common because people don't like to be associated with the phenomena, first of all, because, you know, it puts them, people think that they're crazy or hallucinating. And another thing is people are frightened of this whole phenomena. They, for whatever reason, people find this whole subject pretty scary. And I always try and reassure people, you know, it's really nothing to be afraid of. You're just dealing with people. And if anything is going on, it's just the only fear that you have is because you don't understand it. So if we can just bring understanding to it, I think that we can remove the fear aspect. And I don't think hoaxing is a big problem in ghost research, certainly not like it is in UFO research. I think it's a little bit more common there. But as far as ghosts, for the most part, I don't think it's a huge problem.
Have you ever had a personal experience where you made physical contact with a spirit?
Yes, I have, actually, and more than once. I would say the first time was my absolute first ghost experience when it was about 2 weeks after my mom had died, and we were at the service, when I saw my dad drive up in a car, and my mom was sitting right next to him in full color, sitting very, she has this great posture. I recognized her instantly. No one else seemed to see her, And as soon as she got really close, she kind of just faded away. So I didn't physically touch her there. But there's been, you know, other cases where I've had contact with, I think, her spirit. I really, you know, I visited a number of mediums who gave me messages from her. And I would feel her spirit around me because I was trying to make contact with her. And one time I was in my apartment when the light turned off and then on. It kind of flickered in a really slow, strange way. And it was obviously strange. I stood up and I said out loud, "Is there anybody here?" And at that exact moment, my answering machine let out one long, loud beep. Now, the problem with that is I cannot make my answering machine do that. I can't make it beep like that no matter what button you press. So I don't know how that happened. And so when all this stuff was going on, I'm like, okay, Mom, if this is really you, because this is all kind of ambiguous and could be interpreted a number of different ways, I said, what I want you to do is take the statues, the bronze statues that I have on my toilet in the bathroom, and move those. I know exactly what position they're in. If you can move those, I'll know it's you. I said this out loud. And I think the next day, I was in my house when I heard this loud crash coming from the bathroom, ran into there, and all the bronze statues were on the floor. And these are little statues of, you know, animals, like a dragon or a fly and a frog, little bronze statues, but heavy enough where they don't move by themselves. In fact, that's the first thing I did, is I put them back up on the toilet, and I jumped up and down, and I banged on the walls, and I did everything I could to make these things fall down. They would not come down. So that was pretty dramatic, and I think I actually did make some sort of contact with her spirit on that case. But, you know, there's been other cases. I've been to haunted houses where I'm walking through it, and suddenly my hair will be pulled. Someone pulls my hair. Or someone will stick their finger in my armpit and make me jump and turn around, and there's nobody there. And things like that have happened periodically. I think one of the most dramatic cases where I had, like, physical manifestations was when I went to visit a physical medium, this lady who actually does what's called table lifting. I don't know if you've heard of that, but
I think I have.
It's kind of like a Ouija board. In fact, it's pretty much exactly the same phenomena, only you're using a table where you get a bunch of people, you know, three, okay, four, five, and you sit around this table and call on the spirits and try to get them to make knocking noises or, even better, lift the table up and levitate it. And that's what we did. And I went there to visit first. I saw, you know, this medium doing it with a group of four people. They all sat around a table, put their fingers lightly on it, and called on the spirits. You know, are there any spirits there? And we want to communicate with you. And at that point, the table started to shake, and then it lifted up on two legs, and it would jump up and down and pound. And I thought, as I looked at it, I'm like, I don't know. I think these guys might be hoaxing me, because it looks like they could be doing this with their own fingers. So I was really eager to, you know, have a turn and do it myself. And when I finally got a turn to sit down at the table and be one of the, you know, people sitting there, I knew instantly that it wasn't a hoax, because the way this table moved, it jerked around underneath your fingers, and you had a hard time keeping up with it. But just in the interests of science, I had everyone get away from the table except for me and the medium. And I said, okay, I've got my hands on the table, now you place one hand on it and see if the table will rise. And she did, and it rose right up. I'm like, okay, I tried to do it myself, I couldn't do it. And I'm like, okay, just place one finger, as lightly as you can on the surface of the table and see if it will go up. As soon as she placed her finger lightly on the surface of the table, it rose up at 45 degrees sharply. So it was obviously real.
Well, and can I interject here?
Sure.
Was the table ever checked out? I mean, because this particular thing is on record as being, I don't want to say a hoax, but many times they have found that these tables inside of them have magnets, and in the floor or underneath the floor is a reverse polarity magnet that when it's electric magnet, when it's turned on, it can lift the table up and down and make it move sideways. I was wondering if the table was checked out to see if anything like that might have been between the panels of wood or anything.
Oh, absolutely. Not only did I check it out, I insisted on using other tables. I insisted on doing it in other locations.
Uh-huh.
And I brought a compass. I brought all these instruments.
Oh, you did.
And I was not able to detect anything like that. And was actually able at one point to do it myself without the help of the medium. And was never able to do it again.
Well, that's interesting.
But it convinced me, and, you know, I talked to other people who were doing it, and some of the mediums as well. And they said that they could actually physically feel this energy come through them. What's really interesting is depending on the spirit you spoke with, or the allegedly spoke with, the table would move and behave very, very differently. Like with one person who committed suicide, it was a very gentle table, but another guy who died violently, the table would just bang up and down and levitate and run across the room, and so we could barely keep up with it at times. It was really quite extraordinary.
Where was the most haunted place that you could think of?
The most haunted place I can think of? The Queen Mary is probably one of them, I would say. There's a number of hotels across the United States that are extremely haunted. The Myrtles Plantation, I believe that's in, where is it, Georgia or Alabama? Maybe it's Louisiana, I forget, but that's an extremely haunted place. There's a place in Scotland, too. I wish I could remember the name of it, but it's extremely haunted. They could put ghost tours there, and pretty much every time something happens. And there's a lot of haunted places all over the place. I would say that those hauntings are a lot more common than people realize.
Do you think that the paranormal is tied into UFOs in any way?
I do, Ken, and I wish I knew the answer, because I've talked to, this is how I got into it. I started interviewing people about their UFO experiences, and in the interest of being completely fair, I would ask them, have you had any other paranormal experiences or something you can't explain? And so many of these people have also seen ghosts or had a near-death experience or an out-of-body experience. There are a lot of cases of people I've talked to who have seen a UFO, and then days later their house is hit by this really bizarre poltergeist-like activity. I think there is a connection, and I don't know exactly what it is. My theory is that UFOs are attracted to people who are have psychic abilities, or that in other cases, the trauma of having a UFO contact opens up these abilities in people. And so suddenly they'll be abducted by aliens. The next thing you know, that they're having ghost problems. So I don't know what the connection is, but I'm sure that there is one.
When people think of ghosts or spirits, I think that they tend to believe that Europe has more hauntings than anywhere else. Do you think that this is true?
I do, and especially England. I think the reason for that is because, you know, there's been people living there in a more dense population than here in the United States. Certainly we do have ghosts here, Native American ghosts, ghosts of miners, ghosts of pioneers, but England, ghosts seem to be the word of the day. And I talked to a lady who had never seen a ghost. She went to England, and she made the mistake of telling her uncle, "Oh, I don't believe in ghosts." He's like, "Are you kidding? There are 20 places within a mile of here that are haunted, and I'm going to show you the ghosts." And that's exactly what he did. He took her to see the hangman's noose was one, where you can hear this person being hung. There was another where you can see ghostly horses, and she saw these ghostly horses run across a field. There was another, he took her to this old abbey, a sort of abandoned church. And he says, "There's ghostly monks here. Just wait and we'll see those too." And sure enough, these forms of these apparitions, these ghostly monks appear. And she was totally convinced, of course. And promise never to doubt him again. And yeah, she saw ghosts in 4 or 5 ghosts in one day.
Hmm.
Crazy.
Would you tell my readers the steps to a paranormal investigation?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You're going to investigate the paranormal. First thing you're going to want to remain is calm. Keep your emotions in check, and don't jump to any conclusions. But you'll want to bring in as much electromagnetic instrumentation, you know, instruments as you can afford, including a thermometer, because ghosts apparently do have the ability to change the temperature, and they apparently use heat energy to manifest. So when the temperature of an area suddenly drops, this can be a clue that a ghost is about to manifest, and this can be easily measured with a thermometer. Cameras, infrared, digital, whatever, all types of cameras you can bring are another really good tool. Audio recorders, it's another thing you'll want to bring because you can capture EVP phenomena. Another, I think probably the most, the best instrument to bring is a medium, another person who actually has a reputation and for being able to contact ghosts and spirits. And if you can bring in 2 mediums separately, well then that's excellent because you can get independent confirmation not only from 2 mediums but from your actual instruments that you bring along. And of course you'll want to interview all the witnesses separately, record their interviews, and then interview them again, because people don't often tell you the whole story the first time. They want to test the waters, see if you're going to believe them. And you'll want to go to, you know, the libraries or on the internet and research the history of an area. Talk to the neighbors. There's all sorts of avenues that really need to be followed up when you're doing a paranormal investigation, of course, depending on what you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's possible that when we die, we just go to another dimension and that sometimes we become visible to the living if the circumstances are correct?
I'm sure that is exactly what is happening. I think that we do go to another dimension, and there's a lot of evidence to support this, to support, you know, life after death.
Mm-hmm.
Not only the appearance of ghosts, but from mediums, out-of-body explorers, all sorts of stuff. And I think that's exactly what a lot of ghosts are. So they're suddenly becoming visible for whatever reason. I don't know if it's... I don't know why some people see ghosts and others don't, and why some ghosts are transparent and others are completely physical looking. But my sense is that when you're on the other side, everything is very physical looking. And the reason that it appears, you know, transparent to us is because it's at a different vibration, whereas the ghosts who are looking at us from the other side probably see us as, you know, less than physical, or, you know, sort of transparent, because we're on a completely different vibratory level. So it works both ways, I think.
Some people will say that once you use a Ouija board, it's very hard to get rid of the spirit you summoned. Do you think that's true?
Yes and no. I think that the Ouija board is just a piece of wood, for one thing. It doesn't have any special powers in and of itself. So whatever's happening when people are using the Ouija board, it's because of the person itself who is bringing this in. It's not the board. So, but on the other hand, like I said, I've talked to a lot of people who use Ouija boards and regretted it because they caused a bad haunting. And it's pretty easy, actually, to close these doors. The lady, you know, from the other side that you've opened up, the lady I worked with who was a physical medium, when she would do table lifting, she went through a whole ritual every time where she'd clear the room of spirits using a white light meditation, which she says is very important to do, because if you don't do it, you'll have problems. And she did have some problems a couple of times when she forgot to do it. She had some unexplained fire in her kitchen. She had some weird noises going on in her house. And one time she had a really evil presence, and she was able to get rid of it by just doing this white light meditation. And So I do think that it's possible to summon ghosts and have a problem getting rid of them, but it's also quite possible to get rid of them as well.
Do you think that any race has a better chance of contacting a spirit such as an American Indian?
That is an interesting question. I don't know if it's there's genetic factors per se, you know, something that has to do with anyone's actual genes or ancestry. I think probably the greatest factor in these types of cases is the culture. The Native American culture is a very spiritual culture, which takes for granted that there is, that there are spirits, that there is another side, and that there is a whole spiritual realm out there, which I think makes it easier for them to make contact or recognize spiritual activity when it's occurring. So my answer would be yes, but not because of the genetics, but because of the culture.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever gone to anywhere to do a paranormal investigation that you felt you just had to leave?
No, I haven't. And it's funny because I've been, you know, with other people, and they're like, no, I'm leaving right now, because they feel an evil presence. For whatever reason, I'm not scared of ghosts. Maybe I'm naive. Maybe I'm being, you know, foolish and dangerous. But when I'm in a haunted house and stuff starts happening, I'm fascinated. I love it. There was one case, you know, I was talking to the witnesses about their poltergeist-like activity. And we were in the living room, and the kitchen is sort of around the corner. It's a closed-off kitchen, not open up to the living room. When there came a sound from the kitchen that I could have a hard time describing, it sounded like every pot and pan, every glass dish, everything that they had in the kitchen fell down at once and hit the floor. And it sounded like a cartoon. I mean, there was metal clanging, there was springs going off, there was glass shattering, there was things banging. It was all very quickly. It happened in about 2 seconds. Very, very loud. We all stopped talking, and none of them wanted to go in there. I went running in there, and there was nothing. There was no change at all. There was nothing on the floor. I was sure I was going to find that, you know, the refrigerator had fallen over.
Right.
But no. There was nothing there. So, yeah, you know, I find it fascinating. I love it. But a lot of people are really freaked out about this. Even people who are having, you know, being abducted by aliens don't want to see a ghost. They're even more scared of ghosts than they are of UFOs. So, it's bizarre.
I've heard some really strange stories about Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and hauntings. Have you ever gone there?
No, I haven't, but I've talked to some people who've, you know, seen the Civil War ghosts, Civil War battlefield ghosts, and thought it was really extraordinary that there's all this activity is really going on very strongly. So I've got a book on Civil War ghosts in that area as well, which is really, really amazing, some of the stories that are coming out of there. So I don't know, I guess some people are still fighting the Civil War. So, wow.
There's been a theory floating around for years that states that certain minerals may be able to store images and replay them back if conditions are just right. Have you ever heard of this?
Certain minerals? No, I haven't. I can't say that I have heard of that. That's interesting, though, because for some reason, you know, this, some areas do seem to contain the impressions or what have you of crimes better than others. I don't know why that is. I mean, you don't have a lot of open areas that are haunted, but when it comes to homes or roadways or certain locations, they seem to hold on to these energies better than others.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
An example of this is the catacombs under Rome.
Wow.
There has been, many people have seen Roman soldiers and horses, and the soldiers were marching in the catacombs right under the city of Rome, and it repeats at a certain time every day. And that's why I asked you that question. It's like a movie playing back, you know?
Exactly. That's, I think that that's exactly what it is. Another theory is that there's a time slip and that people aren't seeing a residual haunting. They aren't seeing spirits. What they're seeing is sort of a window back into time, which, you know, has some validity to it, I think. That there are some cases where people have seen some really extraordinary, full-blown environments that are straight from the past, not just, you know, one person or two person walking around, but they see all the trees, they see the carriages, they see people dressed up in old-fashioned clothing, and all this stuff. So that's another theory, which I think does occur in some places, sort of a time slip type of thing. And that could be what people are seeing, you know, in these catacombs.
At this point, we've gone for an hour. I have some more questions. Do you feel like going on a little while longer?
Sure, yeah. I love this stuff. Are you kidding?
Do you think that all those stone circles that have been built around the world have anything to do with the paranormal?
You know, I've studied some of these, and I visited some, and it seems to me that they could. I don't know. The problem is we don't know who built them. We don't know the purpose for them. Some of them seem to have some sort of a connection to astronomy. Others could be used for various ritual type things. And, you know, some people believe that they're sacred areas and have been built over ley lines or magnetic anomaly areas. Which there is some evidence that there's some evidence that these areas are actually more prone to having paranormal activity.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, yeah, in some cases they can be used, you know, for that type of purpose.
Are you aware of the fact that Stonehenge, it's been discovered that the stones that Stonehenge was built with were taken out of pools that they had that the ancient peoples had considered were sacred and were used for healing.
Oh, wow. No, I hadn't heard that, but I know that there's a lot of new stuff being discovered about Stonehenge every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there was recently another study where they found a bunch of archaeological stuff around that area.
There was. They found villages.
Right.
You know. Why is it that some places near these circles, like, for example, the pubs, some pubs in England, seem to have a lot of paranormal activity? This is where you mentioned ley lines. I was going to ask you, could this be related in any way to ley lines?
I do think that that is probably the case. I mean, there are some areas which are just known for having activity that's not only just ghosts, but all kinds. And whether it's a vortex type of thing or not, I don't know, it's hard to say. Topanga Canyon actually is an area which is known for a lot of UFO activity. Well, not surprisingly, it's also known for a lot of ghost activity and lots of other just really bizarre paranormal stuff. And the same is true for the Hudson Valley area in upstate New York.
Yes.
Huge UFO hotspot. Also has a lot of these really strange stone structures in which people have seen all kinds of spirits coming in and out of. Philip Imbrogno has done a lot of research on this, and there's definitely some sort of connection there. So I think that the ancients, or whoever built these things, were able to sense that these areas did have, or still do have, weird electromagnetic anomalies to them, or, you know, a greater electromagnetic energy that allows the paranormal to manifest more easily. I mean, I'm just speculating at this point, but certainly that these areas are true areas. I mean, something is going on there.
Mm-hmm. Would you tell us what ley lines are?
I wish I knew, but apparently they're just the whole Earth, of course, is encased in a magnetic field, and which is not uniform. There are certain areas of the Earth which are more magnetic than others, and that is what these things are. It's some sort of the energy field that surrounds the Earth, the aura, if you'll allow that term. I think that that's exactly what it is. These are just areas of high energy. And they crisscross the planet, and some areas are so strong that they've, you know, earned a very strong reputation for having these kinds of activity. So whatever these ley lines are, they've been recognized for centuries. And I think we should, this is where I think there's a lot of opportunities for research today using technology to sort of measure these ley lines, if there really is, you know, electromagnetic anomalies going on here or not. Because it would be pretty easy to measure with the instruments we have today.
Yeah, that's another point. They don't seem to be able to measure anything with the instruments. Apparently, the energy, if there is energy, coming from where the ley lines cross, is a type of energy that we're not familiar with.
Right. I've heard some people say that dowsing is another way
to
detect spirits and things like this. And I'm a believer in dowsing. I know a gentleman who's said he's very successful. He makes a living doing dowsing, locating wells.
Mm-hmm.
This is up in Wisconsin, I believe. And he's very well known in his neighborhood and insists that he's accurate most of the time. And he's a pretty convincing guy.
Mm.
So dowsing is another way to detect these type of things.
excuse me. There was always a lot of talk about near-death experiences. I'm talking about seeing the light or seeing a beautiful place. Some scientists say that this is normal brain activity because your brain fires up more as you're dying and gives this illusion. What do you think, and why do you feel that way?
I disagree very, very strongly. I think I love the whole phenomenon of near-death experiences. I've studied it very extensively and talked to a lot of people. And I know it's not a function of the brain dying because we have proof. People have gone out of their body and seen relatives who they thought were alive but were actually dead. They have seen scenes which they did not know about in real life but were able to return back to their body and go back and find out that this was in fact true. And for example, people will be, you know, having a surgery and they'll have a near-death experience, pop out of their body, and one lady saw a nurse take the blankets off a bed and not put them in the washer, just put them in the dryer. She didn't clean them.
Mm-hmm.
And when she told the nurse this, the nurse turned white and said, "How did you know?" Well, she saw it. You know, other people have seen their surgeries taking place to the point where they can name the music that's being played on the radio. They can name the instruments that are being used, all this kind of stuff. There's a lot of evidence that people are actually having these experiences and not hallucinating.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole phenomenon of out-of-body exploring is another one, because that's something I got really into, which I think is a way of having a controlled near-death experience without having to actually die. You can go down the tunnel of light, you can go to the other side, and you can visit your deceased relatives and see for yourself that this is all really true, and anyone can do it. So I'm a huge believer in near-death experiences. They follow a very, very set pattern, and I think it's extraordinary evidence for life after death.
Do you think that the people that have had a near-death experience who are no longer scared of death prove anything by this?
Well, to themselves, they've certainly got the proof for themselves. And, you know, when it comes to the paranormal, that's probably the best proof you're going to get is your own personal experience. Because proof is in the eye of the beholder. I mean, you can bring a skeptic a photograph of a ghost, an audio recording of a ghost, you know, evidence that the ghost, you know, pushed a chair over and all this stuff. And they're not going to believe it until they see it for themselves. And even then, they might not believe it. So I think the best evidence that people have is their own personal experience.
Now, why do you think people are so fascinated with spirits or ghosts?
Well, it's one of the biggest mysteries that we're dealing with today, isn't it? And not only that, I mean, we're all going to die one day. And it's something that people don't like to talk about. And I think that they try to ignore it as long as they can until they actually face death. And then suddenly they become very interested and realize that how really integral the whole idea of spirits and the spirit world is to being human. So people, I think, are really fascinated with it because, you know, it is a mystery. People love a good mystery. and it's certainly a persistent mystery. It's been going on for hundreds of years, and we still don't have, you know, what I would call scientific conclusive proof of life after death, but we're right on the cusp of it. I really do believe that we're very, very close to having enough evidence to really prove to a skeptic that ghosts are real, there is life after death, you can go out of your body, levitation is possible. All these things are really on the point of exploding into the mainstream scientific community.
If ghosts do exist, why do you think that most of them hang around in the same area? What I mean by that is if you get a ghost in a house, he usually will stay in that house and he won't go anywhere else.
Ghosts are just like people. That's my explanation. I think people are creatures of habit. They like routine, and this is especially true of ghosts because that's the type of person who becomes a ghost, is a person who is very connected to the physical world in some way, to their house, to whatever location, to their job, or even to, you know, alcohol or drugs or something. It keeps them locked up to that area, keeps them tied to a person or an area or an activity because they're such creatures of habit. So I think that is true. Ghosts do appear over and over in the same place and can stay there for hundreds of years. And this is why we have, you know, so many ghosts who are appearing in old-fashioned clothing and things like this. They've been there for a long, long, long time, but they don't perceive it that way. Apparently, ghosts don't perceive time in the same way that we do, which is something I don't really quite understand, but time apparently moves faster on the other side.
Do you feel that a ghost investigation affects the ghost activity in any way?
Oh, yeah. Ghosts know when they're being investigated, and they don't always like it. And there are many, many cases of people who are living in an extremely haunted house, having activity on a daily basis, an hourly basis. The paranormal investigators move in there with all their instruments, and the activity stops cold. That's not at all uncommon. The ghost doesn't want to be discovered sometimes. On the other hand, ghosts can become really angry at paranormal investigators and will suddenly kick up their activity. And there are other ways, you know, you can affect ghosts. One way is remodeling. Some ghosts don't like it when you remodel their home. And I've had several cases where people have lived in their home for years, remodel it, and then suddenly all this activity starts occurring. So definitely you can affect ghosts and their behavior. They're, again, aware of us. They can hear us. They can see us. And this is, in fact, what I recommend people to do if they have a haunting that they want to stop, is to talk to the ghost as if it were a person, as if they can hear them, because they can. So if you have, you know, a door slam in your face or a ghost trip you or push you down the stairs, turn around and tell that ghost, "What are you doing? You're dead. It's 2008. What year do you think it is? Don't you realize you've died? Go to the other side. There are people waiting for you. Talk to them. Because ghosts, you know, are reasonable people, too."
Have you ever heard of a particular ghost haunting more than one place at the same time?
Oh, wow. That is a good question. That's a flipping through my mental files, I can't really even think of one. But I'm sure that must have happened. But that's a good question. I'm going to have to look into that. I don't know. I don't think so.
I've heard that young children can see ghosts that adults cannot. Do you believe this is true?
Oh, God. I'm so glad you asked me that. In my research, you know, I actually did a survey of every person I've ever interviewed. And I got a real shock when I found out that twice as many women as men in my research have seen ghosts. And as far as children, absolutely, yes. I've got 5 cases I can think of right away where the children could see the ghosts and the parents or the older people couldn't. One case that comes to mind was an apartment in Hollywood where they were having some limited activity, you know, with ghostly type stuff where lights would turn on and off and doors would slam and things like this. But it wasn't really that bad. And then one day they were having a party. Everyone was there, all the kids and adults were in the living room. When suddenly the youngest daughter, she was like 4, she started screaming and pointing at the doorway, saying, "The man, the man, the man." And everyone looked at the doorway and there was no man. And she insisted that there was. She's like, "The man, the man, the man." And she was freaking out. She was very upset and actually had to be, you know, pulled out of the room and taken away. And they did find out that a man had committed suicide there, a police officer who was injured on the job and was a paraplegic and ended up committing suicide.
Hmm.
And she was able to describe him as well. And there are other cases like that. 2 sisters woke up and there was their dead aunt sitting on a chair in their bedroom just looking at them smiling. They were terrified and screamed for the parents to come into the room. The parents came running in. They're like, "Look, there's our aunt. There's, I forget her name, but Aunt Betty." And the parents like, "Well, what are you talking about? There's no one sitting there." And the kids were screaming, "There she is. Why can't you see her? She's right there." They could see her. Not only could they see her, they saw her as if she were fully solid. She wasn't transparent looking. She was in full color and looked like a normal person. And eventually just disappeared when the parents walked up and started, you know, waving their hands around. So, yes, children can see this stuff when some other people can't. And I think it's because they just came from that dimension. You know, they recently came from the other side and are somehow still resonant to it or don't have the cultural prejudices that we heap on to people saying, "Oh, ghosts aren't real and you can't see stuff like that."
Mm-hmm. I was always told as a child that whatever is in a room in the light will be the same things that are in the room in the dark. Why is it that lights are always turned out during a paranormal investigation?
Yeah, you know, that's another really good question. And light does seem to have an effect on how ghosts can manifest. And certainly this is true in seances. There's a lot of activity seems to increase remarkably when the lights are either turned on or extinguished entirely. And I'm not sure why that is, other than that there's some sort of electromagnetic field that ghosts are very sensitive to, and that the appearance, you know, of visible light can retard their ability to manifest. So certainly there are a lot of cases where people have been in a dark room and seen a ghost, turned on the lights, the ghost disappears, turned the lights off, the ghost is still there. So it could be that visible light makes the ghost invisible. I don't know, you know, we're still at the point of speculation with this, but there is, visible light does have an effect on how ghosts can manifest.
I wonder if there's a difference between incandescent light and fluorescent light.
Oh, you know, possibly there are a number of cases where people have used red light.
Yeah.
And they've been able to really have some amazing experiences with that. So I'm sure that you're right. I think that there's, again, this is a good room for people, you know, to experiment with. So lots of places for people to do research in this field.
Is there any reason to believe that a curse can summon spirits to hurt people?
Well, you know, Sylvia Brown says no, curses aren't real. But I've talked to other people, you know, from other cultures, in like Mexico and some of the South American cultures who experienced curses and said that, yes, it is real. You know, I don't know. I think it probably does have some, does the witness believe in this? And if they believe in it, does that have an effect on how well it works? Possibly. I think that that's possibly a factor. But I don't know. Max Freedom Long, he was a paranormal researcher and who worked on Hawaii with the kahunas. And he was cursed by one of these kahunas and had some really bad experiences, but was able to learn how they did it and was able to curse one of these kahunas back and reverse it. So I don't know. I think that the power of thought, some people do have the ability to manipulate spirits and cause them, you know, to do their bidding, so to speak. So there are things that, you know, curses can take different forms, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And if you have the ability to manipulate these astral energies and you've studied it, it can come across as a really bad curse. And that's how people would interpret it, when really it's just natural phenomena being manipulated in a way that we don't understand yet.
The ghosts always look the same age as when they died.
This is another thing that's really strange. No, they don't always look the same. You know, there are a lot of people who have seen ghosts and reported some, they were in the same clothes that they were in when they died, and that wound that they had, the gunshot wound, was also there, and they looked exactly like they did when they died. But there are an equal number of cases of people who have seen ghosts of particularly loved ones, you know, their parents or, you know, a deceased brother, sister, or somebody, and the ghost does not appear at their normal age that they died. They appear as about age 25, 30. They appear very young-looking and in the absolute peak physical condition, which is apparently what happens to us when we die, is we are able to get our youth back to a certain extent. And that has happened enough, I think, where it's pretty much agreed upon by researchers that this does happen. And ghosts don't always appear at the same age. Usually they appear younger.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that most people have had strange paranormal experiences but are afraid to talk about them for fear of ridicule?
Absolutely. I think even skeptics who say, I've never experienced anything, are shoving aside and ignoring some of the paranormal experiences that have happened to them. Almost everybody, according to surveys, have experienced some episode of precognition. Most people will experience at least one out-of-body type experience in their life. A lot of people will have at least one dream which comes true. I think it's very, very easy, though, for people to ignore these experiences. I read one study which said that people who have a child, a parent who has a child die, something like 50% of the people experience some sort of signal or sign that the child is still alive, which is a large percentage. So I think it is actually pretty darn common. And, you know, I've interviewed a lot of people, and so many people, the first thing out of their mouth is, I've never told this to anybody, and don't think I'm crazy. But then they start to launch into this huge story about this experience they've had. And so a lot of people do keep it to themselves, I think. I'm going to say at least 50% of people have had a profound, unexplained experience of some kind.
Preston, is there anything you'd like to tell my readers that I haven't asked you?
Well, not that I can think of, other than to say that if you don't believe in UFOs, if you don't believe in ghosts, I think you're making a huge mistake. And what I advise you to do is to ask your friends and family, the people you trust implicitly, ask them if they've had an experience. And I think you're going to be surprised to find out that a lot of people around you, if you're not having experiences, the people around you are. And that can be pretty convincing when someone you know and trust tells you that they've seen a ghost. So that's what I would recommend people to do. If you're skeptical, just hold on a second and do some actual investigations. Look into this stuff, and I think you'll find out that it's all very real, and if you want to, you can experience it yourself.